In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this is the law and the prophets. Jesus, in one fell swoop, summarizes everything we have read up until this point. In everything, and notice what Jesus says here, in everything, Jesus tells his followers and those who will decide to follow him later, that in every part of your life, in every part of your relationships, in every part of your vocation, the totality of this summarization points to a way of life which will inhabit the world in a different way. And we are noticing this, right? Hopefully, as we've been reading the Sermon on the Mount, we're noticing that Jesus is not just calling for us to have some personal relationship with him, this just me and God type thing. But instead, when we say yes to following Jesus, the Spirit begins to work a transformation in all of our life, from the inside out, from the private to the public. Your heart will be transformed, is what Jesus is saying. And as your heart is transformed, what is valued and what is treasured will look different as well, as Justin reminded us last week. Because the heart is the key to this whole thing. The heart is the key to the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is going for the heart of the person. And so I've been realizing, as I've been reading the Sermon on the Mount and as I've been studying it, I begin to realize that as I'm writing sermons, as I'm writing notes, that I continue to use the phrase, and I noticed Justin used it last week. And yes, I know, we were in Denver, great anniversary trip, but I still listen to the sermon. I just got to do it from my house. But what I noticed is that Justin said it too, and I've been saying it, and it's this phrase, if we are honest with ourselves. The Sermon on the Mount has a way of making us think about our own lives and almost say, well, if we're honest with ourselves. And we can't help but, as we read this text for today, feel a need to be honest with ourselves again. I mean, up until this point, Jesus has been working on our hearts. He's been working on our trust. Who do we trust more? And today we have to ask ourselves this: what is my attitude towards people? What is my attitude towards people? How do I live relationally with others? And here's the thing about this text. If we can't wrestle with it, or if we decide that we just want to shoo it away, because there's a lot of parts of the Sermon on the Mount, I don't know if you noticed, it's just better if we kind of just say, well, I know you said that, Jesus, but I can't. That's a little too hard. But we can't shoo it away, because if we do, we're going to risk something. We're going to risk losing our credibility with people we talk to. We're going to risk our credibility, and we do that from time to time, because it's really easy to get hung up on this first part of chapter 7, 1 and 2. It's real easy to get hung up on this judging portion of it, when Jesus says, do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged, for the measure you give will be the measure you get. And most of us in here probably heard multiple opinions on this part of the text. In fact, we probably had countless debates and found ourselves trying to defend this text and going in circles as we make our position. And we find ourselves, as we talk about this text, doing the very thing that Jesus tells us not to do. We can't help it. We really can't. We want to be right. I want to be right. And I'll talk about that in a minute. My desire to be right, but I want to be right. And you know why I want to be right? Because what I've learned is there is a lot of power in being right. There's status in being right. And I think this whole notion of wanting to be right comes from how we're reading the text. Because remember, we read the text with Western eyes, through a Western context, and in a certain translation. Most of us in here are reading an English translation of Scripture. And so when we read the word judge, or even hear the word, our mind goes to a certain kind of judicial metaphor. It's almost what we talked about a few weeks ago, a for or against, a guilty or a non-guilty stance. And when that happens, judge, when we talk about the word judge, another word that people use for that is condemnation. You hear people say, don't judge me. Don't, and if you carefully listen, they'll say, don't condemn me. Because that's how those two words have kind of been tied together. Condemnation, though, when we think about it, seems like an antithetical stance when it comes to the followers of Jesus. Think about it. Everything we've read up until this point, condemnation seems to be antithetical to what Jesus is trying to do. We have just got done hearing Jesus talk about the radical love in the world that he's bringing, a love that has the power to transform enemies into friends. Friendships, not condemnation, seems to be the path of Jesus. But the question is, and the hard part for us as we read this text is, can we trust to follow Jesus down this path? Can we trust what Jesus is saying in these words? Because it's not going to be easy, lest you think it is, because of what I mentioned just a couple minutes earlier, and it is that need to want to be right. I mean, we all want to be right. Don't think being right is not important to us. Catherine Schultz wrote a phenomenal book in 2010 called, and this is the title. So when I saw the title, I got the book. The title of the book is just Being Wrong. Being Wrong. And she takes you on a journey of our desire to be right. But actually, as she finishes, says, maybe we need to start taking a stance that we don't know everything. And that we actually, more times than not, are actually wrong. And what can we learn if we realize that we're actually wrong a lot of the times? What can we see? And whether we believe that we're wrong or not, I want you to think about this. Think about the last time someone pointed out your wrongness. If you're like me, it was yesterday. But think about the last time someone challenged you on an idea or challenged you on a conversation. And do you remember how you felt when there was the possibility that you could have been wrong? You remember how you felt in that moment? Maybe got a little defensive? Maybe started trying to think about other ways to be right? And if you want to know anything about me, I don't do being wrong very well. Why? Because it's easier if you just realize that I'm right. I mean, it seriously is. Just if we start with the premise in a conversation that I'm right, then all will be good. I mean, right? Thank you. Because if you think that I'm wrong, or better yet, if I think you're wrong, then here's what might happen. I might remind you in a very passive-aggressive way of your wrongness, and then I might put a mental note in my head that reminds me of your wrongness, and then what I'll do is I'll categorize you and say, oh, you're one of those people, and then what I'll do is I'll pray for your salvation one day. Yes, I have. I'm sure this is not familiar with any of y'all, though, right? None of y'all do this. It's just me. And I know it sounds a bit harsh, and I know it sounds a bit extreme. And there's many of us, as we read this text, will say, I mean, come on, Russell. I'm not that harsh to people. I don't think that way. And isn't it always interesting how we never see ourselves as being too harsh? Have you ever thought about that? We never see ourselves as being too harsh in the middle of a conversation or in the middle of any of this. We never see ourselves as insensitive. Now the other person is, but not me. It always takes someone else reminding me, like my wonderful wife, to go, do you realize how you just said that? And then what do I do there? I get defensive and start telling her that she's wrong. But what we tend to say is, well, Russell, we're not that harsh, but we need standards. There are rights and wrongs in the world, and we are called by God to discern those rights and wrongs as we live in life, as we live in a community, and I couldn't agree with you more. But I think that's where we've gone awry with this pronouncement of judgment. This is where our reading, how we read in a Western context, can cause problems. Because if we see this idea of judgment as a judicial punishment, then what happens is judging becomes the final word. It becomes a condemnation on the person. Yet in the way the first century viewed this word, when the first century thought about this word judge, what came to mind for them was this idea of evaluating, was this idea of discerning. Judgment becomes more a discerning process and not a sentencing one, not a stance of condemnation. We can and should discern what is good in the world and in the lives of one another. But here's the problem, and here's the sticking point. Did you catch what I just said? We do it with one another. This is the hard part. We don't ever do any kind of judging in a vacuum. We discern with one another. We judge with one another. There is energy and power directed toward someone when this happens. When we judge, when we discern the state of another, we are doing it to an actual person, towards flesh and blood, a person with feelings. And it's easy to forget this. Why do I say that? Because just a couple weeks ago, as I was standing up here, I wanted to remind you of this idea of the outgroup bias, this us versus them mentality. We can judge someone or condemn them if we don't think of them as a flesh and blood person. If we think of them as just an object in front of us. And so we do this trying to prove our rightness. And in many times, in our efforts to be right, we lead others to the door of damnation, not reconciliation. We turn people off instead of opening the door to listen. And this is what this type of judgment does. This is what, when it comes to judgment and being right and this judicial idea and this condemnation, what it does is desiring to be right talks when it should listen. And how many of us have been guilty of that? Talking instead of listening. It writes the story of the person. So it gives privilege to the right person, the person who believes is right. It gives privilege to the right person to become another's author. Before actually hearing the story. So we start writing the story of the person who we are talking to without ever letting them tell us their story, without ever letting us tell us why they're saying what they're saying and why they are how they are. Instead, we believe if we're right that we start writing the story, and when we do that, we sometimes get ourselves in trouble. The commentary writer T.W. Manson wrote this: "The whole business of judging persons is in God's hands, for he alone knows the secrets of man's hearts. This does not mean that we are not to use all the mental insight we possess in order to discover what is right and wrong, but that we are to confine ourselves to that field and refrain from passing judgment on persons, for our judgment is itself a factor in shaping their lives. And a harsh judgment may help a fellow creature on the road to perdition." And one of the reasons why I use that quote is, when's the last time you heard a line on the road to perdition? But notice what he's saying there. We have to be mindful of how we're talking to one another. We have to be mindful of our such desire to be right that we're condemning someone in a way that's shutting the door to reconciliation. But don't worry, because those are the first two verses. There's many verses after this, and Jesus actually has been witness to this kind of judgment that we've seen. He has seen the need and the desire to prove our rightness over and against others. So Jesus gives us a couple of cues. He actually gives us a couple of helps when we're on that cusp of getting ready to judge someone in such a way to condemn them. And so this is what Jesus says. In Matthew 7, 3 through 5, he starts out and he gives the first cue and he says, "Why do you see the speck in your own neighbor's eyes, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye."
Own heart. Examine your own motives. Examine your own biases. It stops us for a moment in the process as we're getting ready to lay a sentence on someone when Jesus says this. It's not that we're not supposed to be discerning what is right and wrong, but it does call us to be honest with ourselves. The same way we're about to be honest with the person who is standing in front of us in that moment. What Jesus says is, notice your blind spots. Notice your biases. And even notice your prejudices. And if we think about that, if we stop for just a moment and just do a little bit of quick self-reflection, note, what are your blind spots? What are your biases? What are your prejudices? Because we all have them. If we do that, we're probably going to notice it can be a little bit of a humbling experience. We're not as right and perfect as we thought we were. And maybe that's what Jesus is calling us to, a dash of humility. A dash of humility, of being able to be honest with ourselves. It places us in a space to see and hear each other more clearly. Think about it this way. How generous are you with yourself? How generous are you with yourself? How gracious are you when you make a mistake? Because I'm betting you're a lot like me. You have a way of being pretty generous with yourselves when you make a mistake. Oh, well, I'll do it better next time. Well, lesson learned, move on. We have a way of being pretty charitable. And it's as one author writes this, the obvious implication, if we start thinking about this to ourselves, is that an awareness of one's own faults will make more charitable one's judgment towards others. So Jesus is almost telling us, if we're honest with ourselves and realize how generous we can be with ourselves when we judge ourselves, that might be the same way we need to talk and speak to others when we do. To be generous and charitable. The second cue is this, because I know sometimes this can be a struggle. If you are someone who judges yourself harshly, and I know there's those in the room who do, I think we all do it to ourselves, and I believe many times we can be our own worst critic and our own worst judge, and we can beat ourselves up better than the person sitting next to us can. So I don't want to dismiss that. I don't want to dismiss that we have a tendency of beating ourselves up. What I want to do is give you some good news, and Jesus gives us some good news in this. Jesus actually gives us a different vision. And in Matthew 5, 7 through 11, this is what Jesus says: "Ask and it will be given. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, everyone who searches finds, and for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Is there anyone among you who, if your child asks for bread, will give stone, or if the child asks for a fish, will give a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to you when you ask?" Jesus invites the disciples, Jesus invites you today to relate to God, not as some cold deity, not as a deity who is looking to get you or is looking to catch you in something or is just sitting there waiting to cross your name off the list. If you don't get it just perfect, God is standing there with a pen. Because Jesus knows if we respond to God that way, we have a way of reciprocating to others that same way that we feel like we're in relationship with God. But instead, notice what Jesus says. Jesus says we actually have a God who's a Father, who is merciful, who is caring, and who is trustworthy. A God who sits on a throne and judges us, not from a place of harshness, but from a place of mercy and reconciliation. If you knock on the door, what does Jesus say? it will be opened. God is not looking to beat us up, and God is not looking to teach you a lesson. What God is looking for is to offer you mercy in your moments and offer you reconciliation. And so when Jesus says, follow me, he is inviting followers to relate with others in the world through a vision of a father who loves and seeks the good welfare of all. A concrete vision of this can be found in John 8. And I think we all know, most of us in here know what John 8 is, but it's the woman caught in adultery. She's pulled out. Men are getting ready. They got their stones picked up. They're getting ready to hurl them at her. Jesus steps in the middle of it. And we're struck with this one statement. As the woman looks up and sees Jesus, and notices that no one else is around her, Jesus says this, has no one condemned you? That's an interesting word, right? Has no one condemned you? Neither do I condemn you. Go your way. And from now on, do not sin again. I think that's the vision, that's the concrete vision that Jesus is trying to get off in these 12 verses. What it looks like for us to be in relationship with others, what it looks like for us to be in relationship with others when there are times in which we want to judge them in such a way that we condemn them, or what it looks like for us to be in relationship with someone in a merciful way, in a graceful way, in which we hear before we speak. And when we do speak, we realize, and we speak with our words seasoned with love, so that we keep the door of reconciliation always open. When we discern, when we evaluate, when we judge others at eye level, we live with one another on the same plane. Not on a higher level, desire to be right. Not an I'm better than you level, which can be easy. Not an I have it all together and you don't level, which if we're honest, we don't. But we realize that we're in a journey together. We're doing this all together. And so Jesus says, in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this is the law and the prophets. When we do this, when we recognize that God doesn't need more judges, he's the judge. And I think standing here this morning, we're glad that it's God judging and not me or you, but it's God. But when we follow Jesus, we are giving up the life of judgment and entering into a life in which we can speak life into others. There's the big thing. Even as we discern right and wrong, speak life into the person. That's what I think Jesus is trying to get us to do, is to be able to season our words with life and not death. There's enough death. What the world needs is life. What the world needs is to see a manner in which we can stand with people, even people we struggle with agreeing with, and listen to where they come from, and be able to have a conversation. And not just in some things. Jesus closes it in verse 12 with what? In everything. In your work, in your church life, in your neighborhoods, in your family, in everything you do and everything you say, may it be seasoned with the life of Jesus. And may the door of reconciliation always be left open. If you have a need this morning, there are people standing next to you, sitting next to you, who will pray with you. We have elders down front who will do so as well. This is an exciting time for Grapevine. Here in a few minutes, we're going to get to install some new elders, which will be great as well. So this is a good day. But if you need prayers, we are here as well. Come now as we stand and as we sing.